J1, number 18A.
Yes, now I think I'd like to just think about one idea that has been on my mind for a moment, and that is thinking about the significance, actually, of the divine system of reference which we're working with, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and especially as we're going through these ideas which characterize life. And that is to always remember as we go through the compendium together how important it is to always have in mind big questions that we ask ourselves of these synonymous terms. We should be asking ourselves questions which will be valid for 1,000 years to come. Therefore, let's not be asking always in front of ourselves small questions. Let's not ask of these synonymous terms irrelevant questions. We begin to see that a new paradigm or a new system of reference asks new questions, and therefore it gives new answers. So if we always are bringing to our study of the synonymous terms old questions like what does this do for my health, and how is this going to affect my business, and how will this affect my home life, these questions are too small, and they are actually in the big plan of being in 1,000 years from now irrelevant. So let's always bring big questions to our study. And as we are learning then this new system of reference of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, the big main questions we should be asking is, what is reality? What is the reality of the synonymous term we're studying? And then how can I become one with reality? How can I become one with this synonymous term? And if we train ourselves in this consciousness of finding out what is reality, how can I become one with reality in the term, and just getting the pure essence of what a synonymous term means, then this pure understanding has its practical demonstration in the human, and it does eventually answer all of our questions. As we sometimes proceed through our study, often the ideas seem abstract to us and not practical. But it's so important to do as Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. Seek ye first the divine system of reference. Ask big questions first, and then all these things will be added unto you. Then as we go through our study, we'll always show the practical application of our study, but that's not what's foremost in our mind. And we begin to see that Christian Science goes beyond step two in the 8 ordered steps to oneness. We see that step one and step two are concerned so much with our mentality and how our mentality can be good so that we can have a good business life and a good human life. But Christian Science goes beyond asking the questions of how can I make more money, therefore just giving the answers on how to make more money, which is just staying within the realm of one and two. It asks great big questions. It goes on, and when we get into the chart and studying the laws of reality, we begin to see it ask questions like, how is principle its own infinite principle? And then how does principle operate principle? And how does principle translate itself to specific ideas? And then how does ideas dissolve illusions? You see, these are big questions, yet they do have their practical implications. So let's get in the habit then of asking these big questions first, putting them foremost in our mind, and letting daily irrelevances just go. So now the great big question we have before our mind now is this idea of what is life? And how and what does the one mind, our mind, experience and demonstrate as life? We go on now to the ideas which characterize life on our list, and we now come to this idea of multiplication. And I'll just read to you a definition of multiplication from the dictionary. Multiplication has its Latin root origin, And it means having many folds. And it means the act of multiplying or of increasing number. In arithmetic, it means a rule or operation by which any given number may be repeated or added to itself any number of times proposed. Now, in the Bible, speaks of the well of life, the river of life, and the way of life, meaning that from the one mind, our mind as life, flows an uninterrupted stream of ever new ideas. And so we asked ourselves this question, how is this possible? How is it possible that from our mind flows just ever new ideas? And the answer comes when we find out that our mind, the one mind, operates according to its own inherent law of multiplication. And this law of multiplication is a law of being. It's actually a law of isness. It's not a law of becoming. It has nothing to do with accretion or growing to. The one mind, our mind as life, we can say, multiplies itself. It's always concerned with itself. So if we take an example in arithmetic, and we just take the example of multiplication and the law of multiplication, and in this example we see that a digit, when multiplying, is always concerned with itself. Now, let's just focus on the digit 10. And we'll see that 10 is always concerned with itself in the law of multiplication. If we have 10 times 5 equals 50, then we really have 5 tens. Or if we have 10 times 6 equals 60, then what we have is 6 tens. Or 10 times 10 equals 100, what we have is 10 tens. Or it's always dealing with 10, you see. Or if we focus on 7, we can say 7 times 2 equals 14, or there are 2 sevens. Or if we focus on the 2, we can say 2 times 7 is 14, or 7 twos. But whatever we focus on, whatever digit we're focusing on, when it's concerned with multiplication, that digit is always concerned with itself, and it's adding to and multiplying itself. So now this whole law of multiplication is applicable to mind, and mind's inherent law of multiplication. Because we begin to see that mind multiplies itself. Mind is always concerned with itself, and it multiplies what is already at hand. Therefore, it's not accretion. It's not increasing by adding on separate parts. It's concerned with itself. So the law then of multiplication is this. We can say that mind's ideas, which have always existed, are constantly multiplying themselves. They are constantly then coming into new combinations, new relationships. In other words, they are constantly restructuring themselves and bringing out new forms or new experiences. Now, this law of multiplication can be seen in the world today, and actually it begins to be kind of a unique law of creativity in a way. But let's look at some examples from the world. We see in the world, actually, there are less than 100 natural elements. Now, we have these natural elements. And these few natural elements are constantly multiplying. They're constantly restructuring and bringing out new patterns, let's say, of land and oceans and stars and animals. But these land and ocean and stars and animals are patterns made from less than 100 natural elements. Or you can take literature, and you say that there's 26 letters in the English alphabet. These 26 letters are constantly multiplying themselves, constantly restructuring themselves, and bringing out new patterns. And these patterns are patterns of all the modern English literature that has ever been written. See, the modern English literature are just patterns of only 26 letters. Or we can take a subject like art, and we can just say that there are the basic elements of art, such as line, value, color, texture, form, and so forth. Now, these basic elements of art, again, are just multiplying, restructuring, and bringing out new patterns. And they're the patterns for all the paintings that have ever been made. So we say that, well, how can we tell a difference between a Rembrandt and a Picasso? Actually, they contain the same basic elements of line, value, color, form, texture, and so forth. Yet just because these elements are in a different combination, we have pictures that are different. Or you can take music and you take the basic notes of music, and again, they just restructure and bring out new forms and bring out all the various forms of music that have ever been written. We can just go on and on and on. This is true of the arithmetics, the digits, which restructure and bring out all the patterns of calculations that have ever been done with arithmetic. Or an interesting one that I think is really profound, and this is the digital computer. See, the computer, as you know, operates just on two points. It operates on two components, a zero and a one, or often it's called pulse or no pulse. But now this zero and a one just restructures itself, you see, just multiplies itself, and it brings out new pattern. So all the computations that ever come out of a computer are just based on a zero and a one. And it's just fascinating when you read about a computer in the arrangement. And I have written out for myself, I was reading about computers, just how they count from 1 to 10 just using a 0 and a 1. It's really fascinating. But the main point is that whenever we're talking about something new, it's always just an original pattern of already existent components. So we can see then that this law of multiplication in mind is quite powerful, and it has its implications on the world today. And it's so simple just to see that there are just basic ideas that always exist. We've always existed, but because we come into new relationships and new experience combination, the result is new experiences. Now, too, we can see that because mind is always multiplying itself, and because ideas are always multiplying themselves, we see then that the result is a constant flow of new ideas, and therefore we have spiritual abundance. And we know that abundance just means great plenty and an overflowing quantity, ample sufficiency, and it means an overflowing fullness. So, as we get into the rhythm of calculating with ideas and working with ideas, we'll always have a spiritual abundance, as we will see as we go on. Now, then, we see something that's very important in what we're saying. We're saying that ideas are constantly restructuring themselves. And we say, what is this question then of ideas and its relationship to supply? And when we were studying spirit, we remember that supply, our real supply, constitutes ideas. Ideas alone are our only substance and source of supply. Now, this has big impact for us if we can always maintain this understanding. Because this means that money per se is not the substance and source of our supplies. Now, this can again be shown through an example in the world. It's always that first we have the creative idea, whether it's a creative idea about life or whether it's a creative idea about business. Now, to express these creative ideas, we either write a book, we paint a picture, we play a concert, or we undertake a business adventure. But these creative ideas and their expression, as it is in the world today, are presently rewarded through money. And then in turn, the money is what pays our bills. But let's always remember that it was the ideas which were the source of our supply and not the money. And this is why Buckminster Fuller, as we've seen, encourages young people today not to undertake jobs or professions in which we're just searching for money, that we're working to get a quick dollar. But we are to do jobs, he says, in which we are able to express our creative ideas, in which we can cultivate our creative ideas first, and then be able to see that these creative ideas will have the reward as it is today with money. But again, we can see what Bucky's saying. He's saying, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. So first seek creative vision, creative ideas, working in the realm of ideas. Now, there's more or less an exercise which we can do with synonymous terms that we know up to now. And let's just take the idea of business, this concept of business, and take mind. And we can say, okay, now, first, Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God. So we say, all right, first we must know God. We must know that there's only one mind. And therefore we must know that we are all intelligent. So if we're all intelligent, then we have the wisdom to know creative ideas or divine ideas, you see. And second, as spirit, we can know that these creative and divine ideas are the substance and source of our supply. And then we can realize as spirit too that we have the understanding or faculty of discernment, which is always able to distinguish between creative spiritual ideas and illusions concerning our business. You see, it's at this point, because we know we have intelligence, then we have the ability to separate between what is creative in our business and what is not creative. We have then the purity to focus only on what is creative in the realm of ideas and to let go of all negative thinking. And it's here where you'd get the power of positive thinking, where they'll say, don't let anything negative about your business come up. Just focus only on the good ideas. So this is what we do. We focus only on what we feel are creative ideas in business, ideas which are constantly looking out from the whole and which are embracing and helping all people concerned in our business. And then we come on to soul, and soul says as a symbol then, this is where we exchange all our insecure thinking. We just get rid of all our insecure thinking and we replace it with definite, creative, and pure ideas. And then as we come into principle as a symbol tells us that our distinct ideas about business are going to have to be principled ideas. They're going to have to be ideas which are based on the laws which are inherent to mind and not based on any personal opinions about our business and what we would like to have accomplished. But we know that we are going to have to put our business and our creative ideas into the hands of principle and make sure that they are principled ideas. And then as life, once we are willing to let divine laws operate in our business and govern our business, and then the one mind, or our mind as life, it is totally free to be always open to this infinite well of ideas, always open to this abundant supply of ideas, which are really just pouring forth. But if we've gone through this sense of from mind to spirit to soul to principle, then we're open and we're free just to let these pure ideas govern our business and then our life. So you can see we can reason with these symbols in a very practical way. And then when we see, too, that mind as life is constantly overflowing with new ideas, we can see that they're available to us at all times. And this then is just when we're reading through the Bible, where the Bible speaks of the bread of life. It just means that we are constantly open to new ideas and abundance of ideas. So all one can just drill home and drill home and drill home is just remember that our ideas are our true substance and source of supply. Yes, now too, we can go on and see this, which is interesting, which comes up under this idea of ideas and supply and multiplication. comes this sense of the grace of God. Now, the Old Testament, as Paul emphasized, brought salvation through obedience to the law, or to the Moses' law. And then Paul emphasized how the New Testament brings salvation through the grace of God. So this is interesting. We see that salvation, or maybe we could say new ideas, or living in a realm of spiritual being. To the Old Testament, this was something which we had to be rewarded in order to be able to have salvation or grace. And in the compendium, it's interesting where we read that the God of the Old Testament is like a bookkeeper keeping a debt and credit account of each individual, striking a balance and punishing or rewarding him with damnation or salvation according to the result. So we can just think of how many people are in the Old Testament thought of how they're waiting for a final judgment day in order to be judged according to their life on earth. And if we were really bad, then we're going to be punished with all sorts of damnation. And if we're really good, then we're going to be rewarded with salvation and abundance. But the New Testament, as this compendium goes on to say, is this: life, the God of the New Testament, is the eternal provider, giving universally and impartially, and not on the basis of merit. So the New Testament has a real concept of life as multiplication, just giving impartially to everyone, just pouring forth new ideas on everybody through mind's inherent laws of multiplication. And that's divine grace. It's just life pouring on us constantly, new ideas and abundance. And also divine grace is that every moment is new. So we begin to see through that mind also operates not only on the law of multiplication, but also on the law of spontaneity, that every moment is new. So with these two laws, which are grace laws, we see that we don't have to wait then for a final judgment day. We don't have to have any sense of self-guilt or condemnation, but at any moment we are able to give up mortal mind or misunderstanding. At any moment we are free to enter the realm of the divine mind, and at any moment we are free then to partake of ideas. Yes, now to further illustrate this, just turn to your illustrative material entitled The Laws of Life. Now these laws of life, such as the law of isness, the law of multiplication, spontaneity, instantaneousness, immediateness, newness, abundance, progression, self-maintenance, and creativity, these are powerful laws. And one just begins to wonder as we go through this how we really trust these laws. You know, more and more I begin to see how the more we live by laws, the less we live according to a people universe, the less our business then will bother us, the less people will govern our thought constantly. It's so much, if we can just get into that we're living by laws, real laws of being, and just know that they're operating and trust these laws, they take away just an enormous sense of a material or human universe. So as we go through these laws, let's just see how we, if we really feel them and if we really can daily cultivate them. Now, mind's laws of life, we have then the law of isness. All this means is that the one mind, our mind, as life, is. It exists. Therefore, ideas just are. This means that mind doesn't have to become mind or grow to mind. It just is. And then we come to the law of multiplication. And here we see that the one mind, or our mind as life, multiplies itself. And we've just now gone through the law of multiplication in detail, but what we've seen then is that mind is always concerned with itself. It multiplies only what is already at hand. Therefore, it does not increase itself by adding on separate parts, which is accretion. So then we saw the law of multiplication is that ideas, which have already exist, which just are constantly multiplying and restructuring themselves, bringing out new forms. That's the law of multiplication. Then we come to the law of spontaneity. And spontaneity has a very good definition as defined by Webster. And Webster defines spontaneous this way. It means one proceeding from a native internal readiness. Two, acting by its own impulse, energy, or natural law without external force. Three, produced without being planted or without human labor as a spontaneous growth of wood. And then Oxford Dictionary defines spontaneous this way, acting, done, or occurring without external cause, such as sudden movements. Now we can take these definitions and say this then, that the one mind or our mind as life through its inherent law of spontaneity proceeds from its own internal readiness, its own isness, and it acts by its own impulse, its own energy, its own law, and it's always occurring without external cause. So these ideas, which have always existed and are multiplying, we say, now how do they multiply? Well, they're multiplying spontaneously. This means that they're multiplying directly, proceeding directly from their source, directly from mind, you see. And therefore, because they are appearing spontaneously, we have the sudden appearing of new ideas then, which are always then direct from their divine origin. In the law of spontaneity, we see is a what we could call a reviving law or a resuscitating law, because when something's spontaneous, it's new every moment, coming directly from origin. It's also a regenerative law, meaning that it's new every moment, you see. So the law of spontaneity actually overforms this time-honored law of causality or cause and effect. Ideas appear spontaneously. They appear directly from their divine origin. They're independent of the past, present, and future. So therefore, we can always see that today's experience is not the effect of yesterday. And today's experience is not the cause of tomorrow, but it's constantly divine origin made manifest directly. We have divine origin happening directly, not according to the laws of cause and effect. And also, when these ideas appear spontaneously, directly, they're appearing according to the law of mind and in the plan of love, and therefore they are not happening by chance. This spontaneous appearing is in the plan of love, and it's according to the law of mind. So we go on and we come to the law of instantaneousness. And the dictionary defines an instant as immediate or without intervening time. So we can say again, ideas then are multiplying spontaneously, directly from their divine origin. And because they're multiplying spontaneously, we have the instantaneous appearing of a new idea. We have the appearing of a new idea instantaneously. There is no time process.